Friends, and good morning to those who are joining from the western part of the world. Welcome to the Q3 FY21 earnings conference call of Neuland Laboratories Limited. To take us through the results and to answer your questions today, we have with us the top management from Neuland, represented by Mr. Suchet Davuluri, Vice Chairman and CEO, Mr. Saharsh Davuluri, Vice Chairman and Managing Director, and Mr. Deepak Gupta, CFO. We have sent out a press release as well as the detailed presentation, and the same have been uploaded on the website as well as to the exchanges. You could take a look at that, or in case anyone of you wants it, we could email the same to you. Before we start, I would like to remind you that everything that is said on this call, which reflects any outlook for the future or which can constitute as a forward-looking statement, must be viewed in conjunction of the risk and uncertainties that we face. These uncertainties and risks are included, but not limited to what we have already mentioned in the prospectus and in the subsequent annual reports, which you will find on our website. With that said, I will now hand over the floor to Mr. Saharsh Davuluri, who will now give the highlights of the quarter gone past. Mr. Saharsh.
Thanks, Ravi. Good evening, friends. Thank you for joining this call. As in the previous quarters, I'll be speaking for a few minutes on the overall financial performance and also touch upon the drivers of the business, post which we'll open the call for Q&A. So I hope you've had a chance to go through our New Look presentation that we had shared earlier today, and we've also filed this presentation with the exchanges. The idea of this presentation was to ensure that investors get to understand the business in greater granularity. We would certainly appreciate your feedback on the slide deck, and we'd be happy to incorporate any inputs that you believe will make the disclosures more informative. Let me turn my attention to the quarterly performance. So after 2 quarters of headwind due to COVID-related issues, where we faced multiple challenges on various fronts, we believe that the operations have started to stabilize, though we continue to remain cautious. We're taking adequate precautions at our workplaces and factories to ensure safe working conditions for all concerned. The quarter's performance revenues of 245.6 crores was almost a 20% growth over the corresponding quarter in the last fiscal. And the driver of this growth was good traction both from GDS as well as CMS segments. And we're confident of sustaining this momentum in the medium to long term as well. The EBITDA margins at 19% showed an improvement of 480 basis points over the corresponding period. This improvement is something that we alluded to in the past, and we are quite satisfied with the trajectory that the margins have taken over the last few quarters. We hope to sustain the margins with better business mix, operational efficiencies, and overall growth in the business. On the GDS segment, we've seen levetiracetam as well as mirtazapine as the key drivers for the prime segment, while dorzolamide and defrisirop have done well in the specialty space. CMS continues to move along with good momentum, and this quarter saw greater contribution from development projects that are close to commercialization. We believe our CMS portfolio has built some scale now, and we are definitely seeing positive momentum going forward. Focus on key CMS projects continues to be a top priority for the company and will be critical for ensuring the current momentum and performance. Unit 3 has started commercial operations, as mentioned in the last call, and we've started shipping 2 APIs from this facility to our clients. While it has taken time for Unit 3 to get fully functional, we now believe that the base for future growth of the business has been established, and we see Unit 3 driving growth as more products start getting approved for production from this facility. I would now request Deepak to take us over the financials in brief.
Yeah, thanks, Harsh. Good evening, friends, and a very warm welcome to everyone for our Q3 FY21 earnings call. I will touch upon the financials, after which we'll open this call for Q&A session. Total income for the quarter was 245.6 crores, which was a growth of 20% on year-on-year basis and 1.5% on quarter-to-quarter basis. EBITDA was 46.7 crores. This translates to EBITDA margin of roughly around 19%, which was 480 basis points improvement over the corresponding quarter and 190 bps on a sequential quarter basis. Profit after tax stands at 26.7 crores, which shows an improvement of 141.5% on year-to-year basis and 25% on quarter-to-quarter basis. Tax margin for this quarter was almost 11%. EPS for this quarter stands at 20.79. The cash and cash equivalents in our books are 32 crores as of today. The debt for our books, including working capital, stands roughly around 199 crores, which includes term loan of 115 crores, and our debt margin continues to be at a comfortable level. We had a capex of 78 crores during this financial year for 9 months till date. With this, I will request the moderator to open the lines for the Q&A session. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question-answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handset while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. Before we start with the question answer session, I would like to remind all participants, please limit your question to two per participant only. You may rejoin the question queue if you have a follow-up. The first question is from the line of Sejal Kapoor from Unseen Risk. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my questions and congratulations on a very robust set of numbers again. So first question is regarding our customer.
Excuse me, sir. I'm so sorry to interrupt, but your audio is not clearly audible, sir. Could you please speak a bit louder and use the handset mode?
Is it better now? Hello?
Yes, sir. You may go ahead.
Hello? Sure. Okay. So first question is regarding our peptide business. So global innovators are projecting a significant growth in the peptide molecules with respect to the chronic diseases like diabetes, and some peptides like liraglutide and semaglutide are over a billion-dollar opportunity, which are also disclosed in our latest pipeline of molecules. So, in fact, the forecast for semaglutide is well over $8 billion projected to reach there by 2026. So given our decade-long focus on peptide chemistry and the surge in global diabetic population, the generic opportunity in peptides should be quite meaningful when these big molecules that we have disclosed in our pipeline, they go off patent.
Yeah, thanks for the question, Sajal. Just to be clear, the question was about opportunities in peptides. I think given the fact that peptides are being developed for more broader indications like metabolic diseases, like diabetes, etc., and the question is specifically about, is there anything Neuland's doing on the generic side of peptides? I think just to respond to that question, as all of you know, we've been working on peptides for several years now. Initially, the focus was more on making peptide building blocks, but more so the last several years, we've been making new chemical entity peptide APIs as well. And as a result of that, Neuland has been involved in a lot of CMS projects, which are peptides. Over the last couple of years, we've also consciously looked at the generic peptide opportunities. And given the fact that Neuland has a strong GDS business, we believe that generic peptide APIs could actually add a lot of value, both to our clients as well as to the company as well. We've started developing a few peptide APIs internally. We've already developed peptides like linaclutide. We are working on peptides like liraglutide and semaglutide. And these are peptides, as you have also recognized, have huge commercial value going forward. However, these peptides being fairly complex in nature, the timelines for development, filing a DMF are longer. Typical small molecule takes anywhere from 3 to 9 months to file a DMF, whereas a complex peptide like liraglutide or semaglutide could take 2 to 2.5 years. But given that the opportunity is fairly large and we are excited about these molecules, and hopefully we will have a few interesting partnerships on the generic peptide side as well. And we continue to keep the focus on the CMS business for peptides as well.
And secondly, when it comes to novel molecules for the NCE, we have seen much faster approval coming from the US FDA around the areas of the rare diseases or the orphan diseases. And majority of these molecules and pipelines are generated by small and virtual biotechs, which has been the core focus for Neuland's custom synthesis business. So how do you see our CDMO business scaling up from here? I see we have done 54% YOY growth here, but how do you see the medium-term future? And can this become 40-50% of our overall business in the medium term?
See, as you've said, Sajal, the NCE business, obviously the cycle times for approvals of orphan drugs is much shorter. And depending on the indication, some drugs take longer time, they require longer clinical trials. Neuland, at the core of it, is, you know, an API company, and we are agnostic to therapeutic areas as well as the concepts of orphan disease versus conventional disease. So our portfolio of CMS projects has a fair mix of orphan drugs as well as conventional drugs. And where we've had orphan drugs, we've seen that the timelines for approval has been fairly shorter. I think today, if we look at our pipeline, we are fairly confident, as I had mentioned in the opening remarks also, we're seeing that a lot of late clinical molecules, already commercial molecules, are getting scaled up today. And these are molecules which will add to the commercial revenue of our CMS in the future years. It's difficult to give a clear guidance on what will be the revenue contribution of CMS on the total business, because it really depends on how these drugs will perform end market wise and what kind of API revenues it will generate for Neuland. But our estimate this year, our CMS business is about a third of the total business. And it was last year, maybe it was 25%. So we expect that the proportion of CMS business to the overall business will increase. But it's whether it will be 40%, whether it will be 45% or 35% is something that really depends on how these molecules scale up and become commercially successful.
That's perfectly understandable, Saharsh. And lastly, in the post-COVID world, we have seen a surge in depression and anxiety cases worldwide. Neuland, as we know, is the global leader in molecules like levetiracetam and nitazepine, and our sales have been growing a lot in these molecules as well in recent quarters. Also, something like Gorzola might catch my attention, because in a world where everything is getting online and Zoom-enabled, as well as the aging population, which is again linked to rising cases of glaucoma and myopia, these three, four molecules, I think, are very well positioned, given our backward integration, of course. And so even on the GDS side, these specialty molecules like gorzolamide and maybe levetiracetam and nitazepine, etc., they should continue to see some traction as we have been reporting in recent quarters. What are your thoughts around this, please?
So, Sajal, going back to your earlier comment, the reason why we're seeing, and I think Harsh mentioned, mitazepine is one of the key growth drivers on the GDS side. And that's happening not essentially because the market for mitazepine itself is growing. It's also because of a conscious choice of strategy for Neuland, saying that, you know, whatever molecule we will get into, we'll continue to invest in that molecule in terms of cost, capacity, customers, so that we become the market leaders over the long run. And that's why you're seeing older molecules such as mitazepine, levetiracetam, as key growth drivers, because we continue to invest in those molecules to become market leaders. Similarly, as you know, one of our key focus areas has been to develop our capabilities in specialty APIs, whether it is dorzolamide, solmetrol, indacaterol, so on and so forth. So we're seeing a lot of traction from those. So our overall strategy doesn't change, whether it's a fine molecule or whether it's a specialty API. We will continue to focus on it and continue to gain market share. So you've kind of answered your question yourself, that the market opportunity is there and our focus will continue to establish ourselves as market leaders.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Hasmukh Gala from Finvest Advisors. Please go ahead.
Yeah, really congratulations for a great set of numbers. Just two things, sir, I wanted to know. Is there any element of seasonality that our prime and specialty both have degrown in value terms in Q3? That is my first question. And second question is, from this budget which was announced yesterday, are there any major positives or negatives for companies like us?
Could you repeat the first question?
Yeah, my first question was that there is a degrowth in revenue in rupee terms in the prime segment and specialty segment. So is there any element of seasonality in that? That was my first question. And second question was budget related. Are there any positives or negatives for company like us in different areas?
So in terms of the absolute numbers, there hasn't been a degrowth. Would just like to clarify that. I think it's
Q, sir. Q3 over Q2. Q3 over Q2, there has been a minor small degrowth of 7% and 8.5%.
Correct. So I think between Q3 and Q2, there has been a minor dip, as you rightly said. I think is about 106 crores and niche's specialty is about 46 crores.
Yes.
As I think a lot of this is a factor of what gets shipped out in which quarter, Harsh. And it's not necessarily characterized by any trend per se. I think it just happened that whatever shipments that happened in Q3, those were the numbers. But other than that, there's no discerning trend or concern or anything whatsoever. I think I would probably look at a larger horizon, like a YTD number of this year versus last year, to get a better clarification. And I think on an overall sense basis also, we're quite happy with the growth, not just at a GDS level, but even within GDS, prime and specialty have been charting their own growth. But for example, if you take a molecule like a paliperidone, it was the sales of paliperidone in Q3 were not as much because there were no shipments scheduled. But when that happens, that number would go up. So I think it's a matter of just how the shipments have gone out. But there's nothing more particular I would add to that.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Sunil Kothari from Unique PMS. Please go ahead.
So maybe just a quick response on the budget question previously from Deepak.
Yes. So budget, what we have done, we have evaluated the changes in the budget which may impact our business. So one thing which we picked up is regarding the goodwill. We do carry goodwill in our books, and the tax department has come up with a provision wherein the goodwill tax allowability has been reversed from the previous year, which means the current year. So currently we are taking benefit of goodwill in tax liability, so that benefit will go away from us. So that is a very small portion of the total tax liability that we have, but that is the only impact which we can foresee as of now because of the recent changes in the budget which has come up.
Hello.
Mr. Kothari, does that answer your question? Thank you. The next question is from the line of Keval Asher, individual investor. Please go ahead.
Yes, congratulations, sir, for the great set of numbers, especially on the scale-up in the CNS segment. What I'd like to ask is to know if we see a sustainable growth in our specialty segment, as revenues in the segment have been flattish over the last four quarters, if we see. So like, can you throw some light on this, and what are the key molecules that you see driving the headwind ahead?
So I think in terms of the specialty segment, I think as I mentioned in the opening remarks, products like dorzolamide, Defisrox have been fairly important drivers of the business recently. But I think other than that, we've had products like salmeterol, paliperidone, as well as products like indicapone, ezetimibe, which also have played a key role in the growth. In terms of the last 12 months or the recent period, I think the growth in the specialty has been relatively lower, but it still has been decent, maybe around 15-16%. I think going forward, the growth will come in spurts, because as we expect products to scale up, we expect that the volume growth will come and we should see healthy volumes. So, for example, we expect volumes from ezetimibe, paliperidone, some of the other products to pick up in the next 1 or 2 years. And that should probably drive the growth of the specialty segment. And a lot of the new products that the company has been, you know, developing also are in the specialty segment. So I think over time, specialty segment will, along with prime, drive the overall GDS business.
Thank you. The next question is from the line.
Janice, before you move on, I think the previous person, Vishal Kothari, he didn't get to ask his question. So Deepak was actually answering Harsh's question and he got removed from the queue. So if there's any question that he might have had, you might want to just check with him. I just thought I'd let
just
you
allow
know.
Me a minute, sir.
Yeah. But in the meantime, we can move on. But
okay.
I think it is important next to answer
question
this question.
Is from the line of Sahil Sharma, individual investor. Please go ahead.
Hi, congratulations on wonderful set of numbers, especially the way the CMS segment has performed. One thing we see is that the total number of projects has only increased by 2 from, I think, 74 to 76 in the last 1 year. So just wondering if you can give some direction on how that will pan out and whether that slowdown in growth is something structural or what is the reason there.
Thanks for the question. I think it's important, and I think at the outset for us, the table that we provide is just to show the current health of the projects. And again, in terms of our business itself, it's important to look at these numbers on a broader horizon rather than a quarter-to-quarter horizon. So I think as I was making this point even the last conference call, this number of 76 that we have was probably around 36 or 38 2 years ago. So over time, it has gradually increased, and what's important is that the quality of the projects has increased. We've seen more projects coming in into phase 2, phase 3 and development. And that has given us a very strong basis for good performance in CMS in this financial year as well as the previous financial year. Now, coming to the specific question of 78 falling to 76, it's something that we think is part of how our pipeline evolves. There will be periods where, you know, we may have even a reduction in the number of projects because we've come to know that a phase 2 molecule has failed, so we would remove it from our pipeline as part of our diligence. And as we get new projects, we would continue to add them. On an overall basis, I would also like to just share that our business, new business momentum has continued to remain strong. In FY21, this current financial year, we've added more new business than in the previous financial year. And Newland has also started to establish a lot of business through the referral network. So which means that, you know, we are getting a lot of business through our the reputation and the kind of you know, track record we have established for ourselves, and therefore we are less reliant on, you know, marketing for new projects. But nonetheless, we believe that over time this number will keep increasing. But I think what we are more keen on looking at is the quality of these molecules. We would rather get a molecule that contributes you know, 50 crores of profit than 10 molecules which, you know, don't give us that much. That way we are continue to be very happy with this pipeline.
Right. Thanks a lot. The next question I have for you, the second one, is that if you look at the different segments, there is prime, there is specialty, and then there is CMS. And my understanding is that the prime segment would have the lowest margin as compared to the CMS segment. And what we see is that even the last couple of years, we have been filing prime segment DMS, DMS for APIs in the prime segment. My primary question is, do we have any kind of competitive advantages there because of which we keep filing APIs in this segment where the margins are overall much lower than maybe your CMS segment?
No, I think it's a good question. I wouldn't look at all the molecules in the prime segment with the same lens, because even in the prime segment, we have certain molecules which have very good margins. And at the core of our strategy is to actually look at each and every molecule individually and identify where the margins are under pressure and what we can do as an organization to unlock some of those margins. I think the name of the game for the prime segment is sustainability. That means that, you know, we have to stay with that molecule and long enough so that we can gain a leadership position, and the margins, as we've seen based on our track record, continue to be healthy. Therefore, even in the past in repeated calls, we've said that our focus is never to de-emphasize the prime segment, but continue to make investments in prime, specialty, as well as CMS. Because if not for the prime segment, which contributes to a significant part of the profitability, though the margins may not be as high as the specialty and CMS, it's still a very important part of the business.
Thank you. We take the next question again from the line of Mr. Sunil Kothari from Unique PMS. Please go ahead, sir.
Thanks a lot. Thank you very much. Sir, a very hearty congratulations to Mr. Suchet and Mr. Sars for a very well and very detailed, transparent explanation to every questions to the investors. I mean, and it is enhancing our comfort and confidence. So please continue this practice. So my question is, you will have some objective and some vision for the company. Other than revenue and profit and all this target, what basically your focus area, where you want to see yourself over next 3-5 years? Any type of qualitative reply will be very helpful.
I think, thanks Sunil for that question, and really appreciate your kind words. I think we, you know, very passionate about trying to make Newland a world-class contract manufacturing organization, a destination for APIs. And we want to be seen, perceived by the pharmaceutical industry as a reliable partner when it comes to APIs. And I think when it comes to the API space between contract manufacturing of NCEs as well as manufacturing of generic APIs, we see this to be a very large market, probably $35 to $40 billion in terms of market size. So we see a huge headroom in terms of possibilities of growth. We obviously want to do that meaningfully through a mix of prime, specialty, as well as CMS. And we want to do it in a sustainable way. And obviously we want to do it by investing in the right kind of technologies that give us a certain unique value proposition and ensure a sustainable growth. In terms of financial guidance, I think we've been very cautious in terms of giving guidance per se. But in the past, we've always maintained that from a 3 to 5 year horizon perspective, we at least expect to have a 15 to 20% kind of a revenue growth. And in terms of margins, we aspire to be closer to 20% EBITDA margins. But again, this is subjective to, you know, how exactly the business unfolds and, you know, a lot of the macroeconomic movements.
Correct. So, sir, related to this reply, I just would like to understand from you, which are the major area of the weakness, or may not be weakness, but where you feel you would be giving your personal magic time, where you feel you require to overcome some hurdles or some challenges for attaining or achieving these objectives?
I mean, we could, I mean, it's a good question, Sunil. We could call them weaknesses, we could call them threats as well. And I won't necessarily differentiate them. I think one of the areas is this: in some of the molecules, there's always a constant pressure on margins as well as supply chain. One of the things that we've done over the last several years, even much prior to being hit by COVID, we actually de-risked a significant part of the supply chain and brought it closer to home. So there was a point where almost 60% of our raw materials were coming from China. By June of this current calendar year, less than 10% of all our raw materials will come from China. And that too, even for that 10%, we're not dependent on China, which is buying from China because it makes us much more competitive. In the past, Chinese have been good partners for us. They helped us stay competitive. So we're taking a very conscious call of maintaining that. I think apart from that, we always have the dollar versus rupee, appreciation versus depreciation. Nobody knows where this is going to go. You know, if people think it's going to depreciate, there's an equal number of people that think that it's going to appreciate, but it's anybody's call, as you would know. So that's definitely a risk that we face. There's always a risk of regulatory action. There's always a risk of government coming up with policies to protect their local economy, sometimes at the expense of countries from which they're actually importing. That's another significant risk. There's always risk of quality or some of the molecules being cannibalized by new launches of other molecules. So long story short, we have a very robust system within the organization to look at these kind of risks or weaknesses and constantly discuss them so that we are aware of what could go wrong. It doesn't mean that we'll be able to anticipate everything that comes our way, as the whole world has seen with COVID, but at least we're in the right state of mind so that we can be agile and redeploy our resources the same way we did in this current financial year so that we are able to perform to our potential.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Yachna Bhatia, individual investor. Please go ahead.
Hi. Congratulations on a good set of numbers. My question was, how many years do you think it is going to take for full scale-up of Unit 3? And accordingly, what are your next CAPEX plans? Which segment and what kind of amounts do you see in CAPEX over the next 2 to 3 years?
So thanks for the question, Yachna. I think in terms of scalability of Unit 3, I think it will, Unit 3 is geographically our largest site. And today, it's, as we've mentioned, it's fairly underutilized because only a few production blocks are operational over there. Our plan over the next 2 to 3 years is to continue making specific investments to create specific production areas within Unit 3. In order to meet the needs of the CMS as well as the GDS business. So in many ways, as I mentioned in my opening remarks, a lot of the growth in the next 2-3 years will be driven by the capacities that exist in Unit 3 as well as the capacities that we will be creating in Unit 3. How long before we will have to expand beyond Unit 3 also largely depends on how our business grows over the next 3 to 4 years. We would expect, depending on how quickly the business grows, perhaps the need for a fourth facility. But at the moment, there are no plans for that because Unit 3 has a lot of headroom. In terms of investments, Deepak, you want to give a quick response?
Yeah. So currently, for this year, we are roughly at around 80 crores of investment, and we do have a plan to basically evaluate certain capex proposals which are in the pipeline, so in the range of 50 to 60 crores in this year. So it depends how the product or the particular molecule looks like. If it makes attractive business investment, we go ahead and do that kind of investment. And in the next year also, we are also having a similar kind of investment plans because the business is looking attractive for new propositions which we are evaluating. So that's where we are.
Thank you.
Ask the question.
Before we take the next question, this is a reminder to all participants to please limit your question to one per participant only, as there are many people waiting in the question queue for their turn. Thank you. The next question is from the line of Prateek Kothari from Unique AMC. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening, and thank you for the opportunity, sir. So my first question is on the margins. If you look at the margins over the last 2-3 quarters, it has largely been driven on the gross margin side. And our expectation was once Unit 3 commercialization begins, we'll see a lot of operating leverage which should come in, and our SMA and other expenses should remain stable. But if you look at it on a quarter-on-quarter, on a year-on-year basis, it has gone up quite substantially. So if you can just share some light on the costs around our fixed cost.
I think broadly what you're saying is logical, Prateek, that, you know, Unit 3 is not fully operational, so, and Unit 3 is incurring costs. Therefore, the operating leverage is still not kicked in, and therefore, going forward, as we make more products out of Unit 3, the operating leverage will result in better margins. I think broadly your comments are right. However, I would just caution on one part, which is what Deepak was also alluding to. I think as a growing company that is also creating capacities for the future, we will also be continuously investing in Unit 3 and other facilities. So we will be creating more capacities, which means we will be making more investments. And we will have capacity created ahead of time, which means that capacity utilization will not be as optimal as you might look at it from a static point of view. But yes, I think in a nutshell, definitely we expect operating leverage to improve. If you see, for the last 5 quarters, I was looking at the data, from 14% EBITDA, we have gradually moved to 19% EBITDA, which is also a clear, healthy indication that operating leverage has improved. How much it will further improve, to what extent it will improve, I leave that to you and your modeling.
Thank you. Reminder to the participants again, please limit your question to one per participant only. The next question is from the line of Darshan Mehta from DM Equities. Please go ahead.
Hi, extremely good set of numbers. Really impressed with what you've put out over the last few quarters. Just one question, if you can just guide in terms of, you know, how do you see probably this year you probably might do 1,000 crore top line. On the margin front also, if you can guide, because you said that you've improved from, you know, single digit to almost 20% now. Why do you say that, you know, margins will be maintained at 20%? Because if you take a look at, you know, how generally API companies perform, margins are usually in the range of 25% to 35%. Do you have an expectation probably we'll reach that level? And why are you conservative on the margins?
I think broadly speaking, no specific reason, I would say. I think the way we are looking at our numbers, I think the way we budget our numbers, whether it's, you know, the prices, the raw material costs, forex assumptions, etc., we tend to be on the conservative side. And I think as a growing company with a lot of growth drivers and a lot of moving parts, we always feel more comfortable to be on the conservative side rather than to be aggressive. We also expect our numbers to be better than what we estimate. But let's, you know, see how it goes, and basically hopefully we should deliver better than what we say. But, you know, we're comfortable with what we've said. And I think the basis for what we've said is the conservative assumptions that we have, which is raw material costs, prices, forex assumptions, etc.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Kumar Saurabh from Scientific Investment. Please go ahead.
Hello. So great set of numbers, sir. I have one question on the margin side only. So if we see historically 2014-15 or if we see 2017-18, there were big fluctuations in margin because of raw material prices, like 17-18, like almost a 14% jump. We know that, you know, we have been able to, you know, work on a lot of fronts like reducing our dependence on China and all. Also, the business has evolved in terms of the revenue mix, in terms of CMS versus rest. So considering all of that, if we compare our volatility of margin in past, how do you see in future? Will it remain the same or will it be much more stable? Can you give some insights on that?
See, I think we think the volatility will reduce. Obviously, we don't know what's unknown, but I think because of the size of the growing business, you know, we were a 500 crore company then, and now we are, you know, close to a 1,000 crore company. I think as and today, if you see, last 3-4 years ago, we had some businesses shrinking. So we had a year where CMS actually fell from 130 crores to 90 crores, but GDS Prime grew a lot and raw material prices had gone up. I think if you see the performance in the last 2 years, all the businesses have grown. So, you know, Prime has grown, Specialty has grown, CMS has grown, and the scale of the business also has grown. So I think it's fair to assume that the volatility will come down. Doesn't mean that we won't have uncertainties or unexpected issues, but I think we are a stronger company today. I think we learn from those mistakes, and if the same issues hit us, we definitely will be much better prepared, whether it is raw materials out of China or, you know, any other kind of uncertainties.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Nikhil Upadhyay from Securities Investment Management. Please go ahead.
Hello. Hello.
Yeah,
we can hear you. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity and congrats on great set of numbers and for a detailed explanation of the business. Sir, one question. You said on Unit 3, basically the CAPEX can sustain for 3 to 4 years. I just want to understand that this driven, the CAPEX would be driven by like two things. One is like new products which we would be entering, or visibility of the order book or on our existing product. So one is how large this CAPEX can be and what can be the revenue potential, and of the two factors, which one would be driving our CAPEX decision?
So Nikhil, what we do is that in the business we have a process where we actually forecast the revenues for the next few years, and we will map those products as well as their expected volumes to the manufacturing facilities that we have, and the CAPEX estimation goes based on that. Of course, these forecasts change as the markets evolve and the market share as well as the consumer behavior changes, and we keep updating these numbers frequently. So as Deepak was saying earlier, this year we've spent approximately 100 crores of CAPEX with some more provisional approvals already in place. We expect a similar number next year. So as far as Unit 3 is concerned, you know, some of our investors and analysts have observed, you know, we are going to leverage the volumes and we will get those economies of scale, and the CAPEX will depend on how the market evolves. But generally, if you want to know, it's very similar to what Deepak mentioned on this call earlier.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of C. Srihari from PCS Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity and congrats on a very good set of numbers. If I have to restrict myself to one question, then that would be pertaining to the pricing scenario. On an overall basis, how was the pricing, and if you could please read out specific molecules?
Sorry to interrupt, but I'm having trouble understanding the question. Your voice is not...
Hello?
Could you try to speak a little clearly? I'm not able to understand the question.
Is it better now?
Yes, sir, you may please go ahead.
Yeah. So basically my question was pertaining to pricing. So how is the pricing been for, if you can specify for a few so key products, that would be better, or at a macro level, and how do you see that going forward?
So I think on the GDS side, we typically tend to be on par or even have a premium with regards to market prices. We tend to monitor prices through, you know, export data, etc. So we find ourselves having always a small premium or maybe on par. Very seldom are we below market prices for any of our products, and a lot of that is also attributed to the track record and reputation Newland has as a reliable API company. When it comes to the CMS business, we tend to, there's less comparison because tend to be one of the two suppliers in the market, and that information is not as widely available. But I think on an overall basis, we do believe we command a premium for our pricing.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Ranveer Singh from Sunidhi Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks a lot, sir, and congrats for a good set of numbers. Sir, can you give unit-wise capacity utilization currently in Q3?
It's a tough question to answer, Ranveer, because that capacity utilization changes based on the product mix and which products we decide to scale up. But if I have to give you a range of capacity utilization, I would say that, you know, in terms of productive use of capacity, we're anywhere between about 75 to 90% based on that particular production block in unit.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of A.M. Lodha from Sanmati Consultant. Please go ahead.
Sir, when we can expect this monetization of our Nanakram Guda property, when the money can come in the books of the company?
Yeah, thanks for the question. We would be actually getting occupancy of that facility this calendar year. We expect to get occupancy of that facility this calendar year. And as you may know, it's basically an IT SEZ. So the plan for the company is to monetize it either through sale or a lease rental discounting mechanism, or the other option which would be less preferred would be a lease option, and then use that funds for the business. However, given that it is a real estate venture and there are uncertainties in this time due to COVID, etc., we exactly don't know, or we don't have the exact timing for when that transaction will happen. But we expect it will be ready for a transaction soon.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Rahul from Shifa Family Office. Please go ahead.
Yeah, so my question is about risk management perspective. As we are, unit 3 is almost ready, and we are increasing the utilization. What risk we foresee that our sustainable growth of maybe 20% get air pocket? And that's the question.
So Rahul, you're talking specific to Unit 3 and the risk of that, or are you asking overall?
Overall business, sir.
Okay. See, overall, I was mentioning slightly earlier, Rahul, I mean, there are a couple of risks. One is some of the product volumes don't take off the way we anticipated, either on the contract manufacturing side or the generic side. Therefore, every time we make a CapEx investment, what we're also doing is that we have a, what you call a contingency or a backup plan. So we evaluate multiple product mixes in that block so that we know that even if one product does not perform well, at least there are other two or three products that can be scaled up there so that the overall CapEx and the investment is protected. That's definitely one kind of risk. There's always a risk, ongoing risk from China and dependency on China. However, we've significantly de-risked from China, as I was mentioning earlier, by June of this calendar year, less than 10% of our procurement will have from China, but we will still continue to partner with China wherever it makes sense. There's always the currency risk of regulatory action, quality issues. Obviously, we do handle a large number of hazardous chemicals, so safety is our number one priority. The health of our employees is our number one priority, so we have very strong protocols in place. So long story short, you know, we have a robust enterprise risk management process in place that is viewed at the highest level frequently so that we can continue to manage those risks. Hope that answers your question.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Aman Vij from Astute Investment. Please go ahead.
Good evening, sir. My only question is regarding...
Mr. Vij, you may please go ahead, sir. Mr. Aman Vij, we are unable to hear your question, sir. As there is no response from the current participant, we take the next question from the line of Hasmukh Gala from Finvest Advisors. Please go ahead.
Yeah, you know, a lot has been said about the emerging opportunities that pharma API exporting countries will have as China plus one strategy. So beyond this, you know, 1800 crore type of CapEx investment which we are talking about, do you think that we can grow much bigger?
I think Hasmukh, a lot of our decisions for CapEx or any kind of investment strategies are based on the business visibility. And I think one of the things that Newland has been really focused on is building stronger, deeper relations with all the pharmaceutical companies that we are in business with. As a result of these relationships, we time to time get business opportunities. Maybe large molecules, maybe big contracts, etc. And yeah, when such opportunities come, we would have to make larger investments. I think the numbers and the guidance that Deepak gave is, you know, based on our budgets that we made for next year, you know, conservative outlook that we have for investments. But if things ramp up, we definitely would have to make preparations for larger investments. And I think as a company, we are ready for it.
Okay. So you those areas also.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear the question, the follow-up question.
Yeah, okay, thank you.
Thank you. We take the last question from the line of Aman Vij from Astute Investment. Please go ahead. We take Mr. Aman Vij as the last question from the line of Astute Investment. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Good evening, sir.
Good evening. Please go ahead.
Yeah. My question is regarding Unit 3. So what utilization are we targeting in FY22? As well as we have already spent around 300 crore and you have talked about maybe 100 crore additional each year for next 2-3 years. So what is the peak gross block we can see in Unit 3 over the next 2-3 years? These are my questions.
See, Aman, we can't answer that question because I think Ash was saying earlier that we are planning on building more production blocks in Unit 3. So as that those production blocks come online, you'll see that the utilization will drop and then go up when the products are launched from those. So currently, Unit 3 has about 5 production blocks
which have completely come online. The occupancy of these production blocks is gradually going up, and we will continue to build in capacity as we launch more products from there. So I don't have an answer in terms of utilization currently, but we have taken the necessary approvals in terms of products and product mix from the statutory.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question for today. I would now like to hand the conference back to the management for their closing comments.
Once again, good evening to everyone who's still online. Once again, on behalf of everybody at Newland, we thank you for all the questions. We thought they were pretty insightful questions about CapEx, the product mix, the margin across all three segments, Unit 3, how is it going to get operationalized? What are our future CapEx plans, capacity utilization? I think very good questions, and questions which are important for us to think about and make conscious choices. Everybody knows that the markets are becoming uncertain. The global economy is becoming more and more uncertain. And within Newland, we strongly believe that an organization that is very focused on its business and is agile enough to adjust to the reality by redeploying its resources on a periodic basis and making use or capitalizing on the opportunity are the kind of organizations that will succeed. That's where our focus is, and we continue to appreciate your support and your input, and we look forward to more in future calls. Thanks very much.